Welcome to Slice of PI, where we take quick hot takes on the news whenever we feel like it. I'm your host, Matt, and with me is my co-host and turning pink, Borge.
turning pink. No. My color is the color of the country, which is brown. PI nyo, PI nating lahat, Borge here at your service.
Yes, and we are talking about, of course, the upcoming 36th anniversary of the EDSA People Power Movement. Is that fair to say? Yes.
Yay.
But and it's particularly emotional right now. I mean, we've discussed this before in a previous episode. Yeah. Go check that out on why it's a myth and why it's so contentious. But right now, it's in a way being revived and what's the word? It's being harnessed. It's being repackaged. It's being reclaimed currently by the candidates of this election, particularly Lenny Robredo. I think right now a lot, since of course the declaration of the beginning of electoral campaign, there have been a lot of sorties, a lot of events where in a lot of roads, a lot like proclamation rallies, etc., have been turning pink. A lot of people wearing pink are turning up. Thousands, you can see the pictures, and then of course there are different sizes comparing the sizes of the crowds. But right, and there are people actually, if you look at Twitter, it trended, I think, as of this recording, there are probably around 11,000 tweets regarding EDSA, and there are now scheduled EDSA events by the progressive movement, you know, the pink, the Lenny Robredo supporters. So what does this mean? What does EDSA mean now for this current election, this current race, after 36 years? What does it mean today?
What does it mean today? Again, do we visit our old episode on EDSA as a myth? I think that would explain half. But I think at this point, again, EDSA is an object. It's a political object. May it be contention, may it be salvation, but it is a contested political object. It had been the target of vilifications from, you know, Marcos apologies to Duterte supporters. So, and you have ISCO supporters who would like to move on from the entire narrative itself.
Yes.
But for liberals and progressives and those who are gathering around Lenny Robredo's campaign, this is, I believe, one last attempt to give life to EDSA, which had been, again, this image had been decreased in value for the past few years. Not even speaking during Duterte's regime, it had been decreasing in value ever since, you know, Marcos became senator back in 2010. So I think this would be a one last ditch attempt to give life to it. So as you said, they have plans to occupy EDSA again. But again, we have EDSA fatigue. That's the thing. Is their fire, you know, is their willingness to partake in this activity enough to, you know, enough to go beyond the EDSA fatigue? Or, you know, another question is, this may be a convergence between the old generation of, you know, EDSA veterans and a new generation who would like to relive, you know, the supposed glory days of political participation. So I will not call it a watershed per se, but this is a landmark for liberal progressives, and this is a landmark that is still under construction. We don't know what will happen. We don't know how many people will come out to go there. And again, optics. If they will not get enough numbers to join whatever activity they would like to hold during the EDSA anniversary, then everyone else would see it as failure.
Yeah.
Would you go?
Well, strict ang parents ko, so hindi ko alam. But one thing I do want to highlight here is that there have been a lot of quote-unquote symbolic events that occurred lately. I think starting last year, if you remember, a lot of, let's say, revivals of EDSA usually happened with the death of an Aquino. It first was triggered with the death of Ninoy Aquino, which triggered Cory to run. And then when Cory died eventually in 2009, her son, Noynoy Aquino, was, how you say, compelled to run as well with history. So now that Noy Noy himself has died last year, usually some there's this precedence when he died, he said, when an Aquino dies, something usually happens. So there's that. And another thing about that, I think we can highlight another important news item, is the Operation Baklas. And this is usually this is a set of events wherein COMELEC officials, you know, people in uniform, started tearing down tarpaulins and posters, specifically of Leni Robredo and in the private properties of her supporters. And of course, now they are saying that they're violating private property because the mandate of COMELEC is to, you know, protect public property, to regulate public property. So a lot of people are saying, oh, this is oppression. And of course, this is, again, reminiscent of the oppressive regimes of that, I think, EDSA was reacting to. So what do you think about this?
They actually call it oppression?
It looks oppressive. Yeah. Do you think about these confluence of the rhyming of history, if you can call
again,
it that?
Again, words have values. And if you start calling everything as oppression, the hell? So they're basically shooting their own foot by devaluing
what
you
call it then?
I would call it just basic traditional politics that have gone berserk.
What's so traditional about it?
I find it unnecessary, really. I find it unnecessary. But it's there. It's there. It happened. The rationale behind it is still baffling because they don't need to do that.
Right.
And they don't need to do that. Why did they do that?
I mean, they're supposed to be... people assume it's to favor Bongbong Marcos.
Yeah, probably.
But he's still leading in the surveys.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah. But probably they are afraid. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
If they're afraid, they should have been tearing down every other candidate's posters or whatnot. Anyway, I'm not fully aware of this, fully informed about this entire Operation Baklas, because I find it, you know, a waste of time to ponder on.
Why is it a waste of time?
Because first and foremost, you have social media. There could be posters via social media. They could perform advertisements via social media. On the other hand,
social media access to it is limited. You know, it's still offline.
I know. That's why I said on the other hand.
Yeah.
On the other hand, they can simply re-establish more or less put more posters.
Mm-hmm.
So they can replace whatever was removed. Ganun ba ka-tight ang budget nila na hindi nila kayang palitan yung mga tinanggal?
Well, it's not just posters and tarpaulins, by the way. Take note, it's also murals that they painted on walls, and they're painting white all over it to cover it. So there's also that.
Well, that's public and private property. Again, there's another dimension to it. The line between public and private is not absolute.
So you're saying they're justified in this?
Yeah. If the COMELEC regulations would account for it, then that's the law. Too bad. What they can do is to do passive resistance and paint the mural all over again. Hanggang magkapagod-pagod na sila magpintura.
Right.
I mean, this is merely scratching the surface. That's why I basically called it, you know, I have more important things to think about, especially this upcoming EDSA activities, which is better to watch out for. But the first comment on that would be, again, how the hell do they define oppression? Is that oppression equal to actual physical oppression?
And how is it not oppression? How is it not oppression?
How is it not oppression? Did someone die?
So death is your marker of oppression.
Is someone's life at stake?
What I would classify as death or physical harm, but also intimidation. But
are they intimidated?
Yes.
Are they? If
yes,
they are
they
intimidated,
are.
Then they would not post about it. They would not complain about it. They would not make it public. They would just stay silent. That is the effect of intimidation.
That is a non sequitur.
No, that you judge intimidation based on its effects. If you resist, you're not intimidated. You're just offended.
No, there are people who resist for a lot of people in their behalf. But, I mean, not everyone is as brave. you know, if you look at stories on the ground, there are being reported by, of course, the louder and stronger voices. But in general, you know, again, this not only affects the people whose actual houses have been affected or, you know, trespassed, but also the people who observe this. You know, it's like, oh, that house is being, so now they're being intimidated.
There are certain reports of Lenin supporters being physically attacked. I think that's more valuable. That counts as oppression. That's the thing. This is where I draw a line.
A distinction between intimidation and actual physical harm.
Intimidation cannot be defined without taking into account its effect. Okay.
What are the effects you're looking for?
If they stay silent, that means the intimidation is actually intimidation. But I'm looking at as a collective, by the way. So at the level of individuals, yeah, probably I can admit at the level of individuals, there would be those who would be too afraid to complain. And that is something that I would admit. They are intimidated. But at the level of the collective, since we're discussing here collectives right now, collective Lenin supporters, I don't think they are. So to resist is to negate intimidation. That's the point of resistance. Negate intimidation at the collective level. And since they're resisting, there's no intimidation. At the level of individuals, yes, fine. I would admit that one. For oppression, on the other hand, I'm setting a higher standard. If your life is not at stake, it's not. What can we call it then? I think that's a better question. What can we call this Operation Baklas then? And the next question is, from which perspective would we call it? Or would we identify it? Because from the perspective of Lenin supporters, they can call it oppression, which I disagree. Again, oppression is when your life is at stake for the sake of political purposes.
I think we're risking making this discussion a bit overly academic in terms.
No, but this may be overly academic, but again, I resist the overusage of the word oppression.
Sure. All right. But would you at least admit that there are negative or stress caused upon individuals, and that
I would admit that one.
At the level of individuals,
yes, they can be intimidated. I would not negate their feelings, but at the level of collectives, if they consider themselves as a movement, and they're not.
So they're not okay. They're not well. They're not. Not everyone is intimidated, but the fact that they're still resisting. So if you don't think Lenny supporters are being oppressed, then what are they?
Well, I think a more accurate term would be they're being repressed, which is, again, being deprived of the right to express whatever political sentiment they have. So I think that's a more appropriate term. Oppression, I think, is an unhelpful knee-jerk reaction that would devalue the nature of the word oppression itself. The repression, yes, I would agree. As a collective and as individuals, they are being repressed.
Right.
Okay.
And that is an important distinction, because oppression can be very hyperbolic. But in a way, this is a bad thing for democracy when the government institution represses their people. That is not a good sign for a free and fair elections.
Yep.
So we still condemn that, regardless if it's, we label it oppression or repression. It's a bad thing. We all agree.
Yeah. Then again, are we actually democratic? So that's the next question.
Would you agree that they are being, they are being in a way emotionally, what's the word?
Primed for resistance.
Primed.
Priming. Like
it's psychological warfare is what I'm saying.
Psychological warfare. Well, if that is the case, then basically the Oplan Baklas failed because they failed to intimidate the collective.
It's not only intimidation, but also taunting. It's also stirring the fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the thing. Do you still need to stir the fire of Lenin supporters? It's like, I cannot call it priming or stirring the fire, because you already have a massive fire. It's like adding one piece of wood to an already large fire. That's why I find it odd. I find it more as a knee-jerk reaction in Comelec. There's something going on in Comelec right now.
Right.
And I think this is something that we can agree on. And this
true. It doesn't make sense as a move if they're favoring Bomba Marcos or what. Yeah,
yeah, it makes
him look bad.
It doesn't make sense in a psychological warfare perspective because first and foremost, you cannot add more fire to an already large fire. Second, it already failed. So you intimidated individual people. And again, I feel sorry for those who feel intimidated and those who feel oppressed and those whose works were vandalized by Comelec officials. But as a collective, they are not intimidated. That's why they're resisting. So at the psychological warfare perspective, it failed. So, and there's no, their candidate is, Bongbong Marcos is not losing. So, I don't know.
Well, the reason why I brought this up is because it might lead to, well, it might lead to the ultimate thing that might lead it to another EDSA, which is distrust in institutions, because this is not the only quote-unquote controversy or sin of the comic, because people are frustrated that Bomba Marcos hasn't been disqualified yet, despite having evidence of, you know, not paying his tax his taxes, you know, his ITR,
filing his ITR,
tax revenue. Yeah. So, in other words, if we no longer trust our Comelec, if more things happen that would make us doubt the performance of Comelec, then that would lead to another. Well, what primed EDSA in the first place, if you remember, the first EDSA, was that Comelec declared Marcos as the winner of the elections with Cory.
And that's...
And EDSA is basically a movement of technically losers.
I know. That's the thing. That's a big move in comparison to simply tearing down posters.
True. But
did you see the difference in weight and gravity of it?
Of course. I'm not saying they're equal, but what I'm saying is it might be possible that these events would lead to the overall, how you say, distrust and distrust against thing that might cause complete doubt of Comelec, and whatever they say would lose its legitimacy. That's the problem here.
That's a clear long-term problem. It would depend on how Lenny Robredo supporters would react if Lenny Robredo loses. And this, I think, is a more crucial point. Beyond all of this, how will they react if Lenny loses? Because how will they react will determine their place in the future of Philippine politics. Will they go, will they reaffirm their victim status? Or will they legitimize the system? So it's a tricky position for them to be placed in, especially if you're liberal and you like rule of law.
This is true.
This is liberalism eating its own tail, as I have said in some of my posts. And this is the paradox. So I think for our Lenny Robredo supporters who are listening, what will you do if Lenny loses the elections? Will you pull out the distrust towards institutions card and say that Comelec is biased and delegitimize the entire system? A system that more Filipinos would say yes to if we have high voter turnouts. I think the only hope for Lenny voters is voter turnout actually falls. If it falls, that would give them a more wiggling room to claim an illegitimate election. If voter turnout would fall to around 40%, then they can claim that the election is illegitimate, and that claim would be to an extent valid. Pero kung 70%, again, we go back to the old status, 70-80% ang bumoto, and they would claim that the election is illegitimate, and that would fall on deaf ears. So yeah, it would depend on what they will do, and I think they need to prepare for it.
Because right now, as it looks, as it turns out, I mean, if you see the conversations going on social media, because that's mostly where the conversations are happening, they are so polarized that they cannot accept any other result besides their candidate, or they're not even willing to listen to the side. You know, there are a lot of conversations, I think you and I have observed them, that it's almost there. You can actually tell that we have to accept that there are fanatics on both sides. And these are not fringe. Like, there are like a huge noisy supporters on both sides, and I think it's split precisely because of the failure of the EDSA system. There are people who are trying to revive it for symbolic sake, partly because, like Cory Aquino, Leni herself is a widow, and at least right now, well, they're claiming she is a strong woman. You know, that's why she's colored pink. That's why she is, they see more of a leader than Cory. And then you have the people who are completely frustrated and see that technically the EDSA system is stole the country from the Marcoses. And they're illegitimate. And by their view, to a certain extent, it's the EDSA regime that destroyed the country, right? And that's why we're in this mess. So it's still fractured along the debates on that line of EDSA. And that is actually, whether we like it or not, it is a motivating myth or like the debate right now. It's at the core of the debate between Leni and Bongbong Marcos, the fact that it's between a widow and a Marcos again.
It is the implication of a far deeper problem of concentrating everything on elections. That's why they will have hard time accepting defeat in elections, because that's the only thing that they have. If you have a system that empowers citizens, if you have a system wherein ordinary citizens have an actual and direct say in policy making at the local and national levels, they will not give a shit who wins and loses, because they know that they would have a place in policy making. So end of the day, this is the implication of first concentrating all civic energies on elections, which is a thoroughly shallow practice, which is, you know, elections are supposed to come after an entire process of fundamentals, of discussions, of town hall meetings, of direct policy making. And this is, you know, this is us paying the debt of marginalizing the Marcos sentiments, pro-Marcos sentiments, without eliminating it. So it's also the failure of the liberals. So this is basically us paying the cost of compromises made decades ago. That, you know, progressives and liberals, I feel you people, but you are stuck here in this dilemma. Will you declare, I think they must start thinking about this. They seriously should start thinking about it. What if Leni loses? What will they do?
Yeah. What would you prefer? What do you advise them to do when she loses?
I cannot answer that.
Yeah. Or if, sorry, if.
If. I wouldn't dare. I'm positing this question for them. I will not dare answer it, because I'm not part of them. I'm looking at them from an outsider's perspective. I'm the same way that I'm looking at, you know, other camps. But this is a question that I would pose it for them. What about you? What do you think should be done?
Well, to be honest, if whichever side loses, it would be difficult to rebuild and regroup, because a lot of people are making this the election of our lifetime, quote unquote, the most important one. I actually want to go to that question first, but I think, well, for one thing, we should work towards depolarization at the very least, so that when whatever results we have in elections, we would still be able to talk with one another regardless of the result, you know, at least, again, to be able to participate in governance, regardless of who the president is. So whether it be Isko, whether it be Ping, whether it be Pacquiao, or whether it be Bongbong, we should be able to go across the aisle and say congratulations, but work together, you know, again, Bongbong's unity cheer. Because of the pandemic and the failures of the current Duterte regime, we have to remember that. I think that's precisely, it's an expression. While you see the Marcos expressing their frustrations from long years of being sidelined in national politics, right now it's a bit more, I think the liberals have more immediate frustrations with pandemic, the fact that there's a failure in governance there. So, well, in a way, in some ways, all of us are frustrated with the current regime. So, I mean, to be disappointed by that, you know, will be a heavy toll. So I think in a way, temper our emotions, but know that it's still important, you know, try. I don't know. Any reaction to that? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. We're all disappointed. That's why I don't get why you people keep on voting. But I think the challenge there would be, again, moving forward. The great paradox of moving forward while making peace with history. That's a tenuous issue.
What do you mean moving forward?
Establishing ground for actual democratization at the level of citizens.
Right.
Not at the level of political parties, not at the level of NGOs, but at the level of ordinary citizens. And we do have spaces for those. We luckily for us, we still have democratic elites in office.
Right.
Luckily for us. But they need to maximize those spaces. And the implication of that is they need to leave. They need to leave national politics.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Whoever will, you know. That's anyway, I am keeping my comments short. And I don't want to answer that question regarding what liberals and progressives should do if they lose these elections. But I need to reassert that this is only an election of your lifetime because this is how disempowered you are, that you are reduced to voting. If they realize that, then they can make changes so that this will not happen again in the future, that people will not be placed in a position wherein this would be an election of a lifetime. When it's not supposed to be like that. Elections come and go because we want to replace people in government. Simple as that. To overinflate it, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I understand why we're all fixated, but also overinflating the importance of EDSA. And while it is, even for the world over, you know, people saw the saw EDSA. The world saw EDSA. Yeah, yeah. So, wow, this is... This actually inspired a lot of other movements outside in other countries. But at the same time, it's still hinged. It's basically an election protest. I don't know if I'm it's safe for me to say to compare this, but technically, when losers storm, I think the president, well, the White House, like last year, it's technically comparable. So we're, and yet for here, I mean, what do you think about that comparison? Is it valid?
Compares losers storming
like,
the palace.
For example, January 6th in the elections in America.
Yeah. That it can be, you know, it's not necessarily a comparison, but that can be a cautionary tale.
Yeah. If it doesn't work, it's going to be like that.
Yeah. If it doesn't work, they would be perceived as such.
Yeah.
As sore losers. And Filipinos have no, you know, we have no... ayaw natin sa mga inistalo.
Pikon.
Ayaw natin sa mga pikon. So, ganun kalalabasan kung ganun ang pipiliin nila. And if they would choose otherwise, if they would choose to remain silent, then that is the cost that they must pay.
Right.
And this is the cost that, you know, this is not their fault. This is the fault of an entire generation of liberal and progressive politicians who failed to finish off the job.
So what do you mean finish off? What should they have done to finish off the job?
They should never have allowed the Marcoses to return first and foremost. They should have established proper civic education that did not marginalize other people's values. They should have won over the North, first and foremost. They should have tried their best to. And they should never have allowed the Marcoses to return to politics. So, yeah, they're paying the costs of this. And again, they have compromises. They made compromises. They were able to seize assets just to balance out our books. So, yeah, those are the benefits,
right?
That the previous regimes enjoyed, but now we're paying the cost. They are paying the cost. Liberals and progressives are now paying the cost of those compromises. That's why I don't like compromises that emerge out of compromises. Compromises should emerge out of extremes. You cannot have a good compromise if extreme poles are not set.
Anyway,
I think this Ed's anniversary is, you know, bayad utang moment.
Is it important at all? Is there any value in it?
Its value would be, it depends on what they do on the day itself, but Ed's as a symbol is now a cautionary tale.
All right.
Yeah.
Very ominous, actually, and very measured sentiments here. I mean, while I did try to at least defend that it should be remembered in other way. It's also an easily backfire because while we celebrate the first EDSA, there's EDSA 1, 2 and EDSA 3, which are, a lot of us can say that it is a farcical replications of the first EDSA. Parang cheap copy, divisoria copy of the first EDSA.
Yeah, I think we can only understand EDSA. We can only understand the impact of EDSA right now if we will take into account the second one and the third one. So I think, again, as you said, measured comments on it. EDSA is a myth. It's an important myth. I will not discount it, but its purpose right now in our trajectory is different from what it was. Mm-hmm. And it is quite, you know, as I've said, it can now be a cautionary tale of how to handle autocratic and illiberal sentiments.
Because if the surveys are to be believed and it is a vast majority that support Bongbong Marcos, then the liberals and progressives are just a noisy minority and will be seen as sore losers. So be careful with that. You know, and we have to, well, liberals and progressives need to, in a way, again, de-escalate and try to reach to the other aisle as much as possible. And be careful not to use this to divide the nation, but rather as an important opportunity to unite the nation. Anyway, that is our take on a possible pink EDSA and what it means and how a lot of it is familiar, but you know, we have to wait and see for what it really means. You know, it can't just be too overly, what's the word, superstitious. You know, things are happening in a similar way. It might be turn out different. But anyway, so that is it. Thank you very much for this, listening to the Slice of PI. If you have any suggestions or comments or questions, you may send us an email at pipodcastph@gmail.com. You may catch us at YouTube, Anchor, and Spotify. And please remember, Spotify has a rating system. So please give us a rating. Give us 5 stars or give us your honest evaluation, you know, whatever. As long as we have a rating, please do so. And let us know how we can improve. Anyway, so thank you very much. But until the next slice of PI.
Magandang gabi, mga ka-PI.